Welcome to the IVF Journey with Dr. Michael Chapman, the podcast for couples who struggle with infertility and want to fulfill their dreams of becoming parents. In this podcast, you'll learn actionable strategies to deal with infertility from Dr. Michael Chapman, or Prof as he's affectionately known. Prof is the co-founder of IVF Australia and is a leading Australian infertility specialist who has helped over 3,000 couples realise their dreams of becoming parents. To access previous episodes packed with ideas, solutions and tips that actually work, head over to Dr. Chapman's IVF podcast on iTunes. You can also ask questions by contacting Dr. Chapman's rooms on 1-800-111-483 or by emailing him, michael.chapman@ivf.com.au.
That first cry of a baby born after the long journey of IVF remains one of the most beautiful experiences in the world. As an obstetrician and an IVF specialist, I've had the privilege of experiencing this over many thousands of times in my long career, but I still remain moved by each baby's first cry. It signifies the end of a long journey and the beginning of a new life. This is Professor Michael Chapman, co-founder of IVF Australia and host of the IVF Journey podcast. Thanks for tuning in. To access all the previous episodes, head over to my website, www.theivfjourney.com, and select IVF Journey Podcast from the navigation menu. You'll also be able to find the various services that we provide at IVF Australia. Hi there. Today we're going to talk through the various medications that are used in an IVF cycle. In the 21st century, there are predominantly two types of IVF stimulation, and the names refer to the drugs used to stop a woman ovulating before the egg collection. The first of these is called an agonist cycle. Some people call it a long down regulation cycle. In that particular cycle, which was most popular some 10 years ago, the medication was commenced in the third week of the cycle before the actual egg collection was going to be planned. Agonist refers to a drug that is similar to the natural hormone that the brain releases to tell the pituitary gland what to do in terms of releasing follicle-stimulating hormone. But because it's not quite the same as the natural hormone, actually switches off the pituitary gland so that the body is deprived of FSH. This induces a baseline state where all the hormones of the reproductive tract are switched off. The aim of this, as I said earlier, is to stop ovulation before it is the right time. This medication is continued in the actual stimulation cycle, so women are on it for 3 weeks. Around the world, the same drugs have different names. In Australia, the agonists predominantly are a drug called Lucrin, or Lupride in the States, I understand, or Cinerol. The first is an injection once a day. The second is a nasal spray twice a day. I also know that in Europe, they use a long-acting medication for the similar product called Decapeptyl. These medications have no side effects in the short term. Used for longer, they can induce menopause symptoms like hot flushes. And very occasionally, I've had patients on it for only 3 weeks who've complained about hot flushes. The other approach to controlling ovulation or preventing ovulation is called an antagonist cycle. These substances are, like the agonists, variations on the same structure as the natural GnRH hormone. But like the agonists, they also switch off FSH production and LH production by the pituitary gland. In both these situations, we then can add in our FSH preparations to stimulate the follicles. These antagonists are, again, in different parts of the world known by different names, but in Australia they are called Cetratide or Orgalutran. Both of these are injections on a daily basis, and they usually commence around the fifth day of stimulation with FSH. So they have the advantage of less injections than the agonists. In terms of success rates, there appears to be absolutely no difference between a long down regulation and an agonist cycle. The exception to this perhaps is in polycystic ovarian syndrome, where antagonists perhaps are slightly better. Over the last decade, the percentage of cycles that are antagonist has risen from something in the order of only 5 or 10% to now 85% of all cycles. And the main reason is that patients prefer a shorter cycle. It takes us to the drugs that make the follicles grow, that have the eggs in them. The hormone that we are talking about is follicle-stimulating hormone. In nature, the pituitary gland in the first couple of days of a menstrual cycle produces an increase of FSH production, which stimulates follicle growth. And then within the ovary, after a day or two, in a natural situation, one egg is selected, one egg grows on, and there's one ovulation. But that's not what we want in IVF. So what we do with FSH in an IVF cycle is to give a significantly higher dose for a longer period of time than would normally occur in nature. What this does is not only stimulate that single follicle, but all the other follicles that have fallen by the wayside in a normal natural cycle. Each month, a woman probably has up to 100 eggs that could be stimulated to produce a pregnancy, but 99 out of the 100 actually break down and only one carries through in a natural cycle. But by giving the drugs at higher dosages, we override that natural loss and therefore have a number of eggs to collect when 10 or 12 days of stimulation have occurred. So the varieties of FSH in Australia are now around five. They're basically all the same medication. And in fact, comparative studies show really no difference between them in terms of pregnancy rates. What a clinician chooses is predominantly personal preference. There are differences in the way in which the injections are administered, and for some medications, that's more patient-friendly than others. So the ones that we use in Australia are Puragon, Gonal-F, and Benfola is the most recent. And these are all FSH medications on their own. There is a mix of FSH and LH in the fourth brand, which is called Menopure. The addition of LH is thought to be beneficial, but although the actual science, the randomized controlled studies, don't really show any difference with just using straight FSH. Your doctor will prescribe one or other of these on the first cycle, and it's highly likely if you don't get pregnant, they will move to one of the other medications in subsequent cycles. How much difference that makes, no one really knows. But there is a fifth form of FSH stimulation, which has come on the market. This is a long-acting medication and does away with at least 7 days of the daily injections of FSH that you will have had to undertake. So on day two of bleeding, when the FSH is begun, instead of a daily injection, you get one single injection that lasts 7 days. This drug is called Elonva, and patients like this, obviously, because there are less injections for them. It does, however, only come in two dosages, and so it's not for everybody. The next medication that you encounter in an IVF cycle is when your eggs are ripe. when they're ready to be harvested. At that point in time, they are sitting with 46 chromosomes in each egg, but they actually have to go through a final change, which halves the number of chromosomes by them, in a sense, spitting out 23 of their chromosomes, so that when the egg is produced, it is in this 23 chromosome state, so that when the 23 chromosomes from the sperm enter the cell, it puts them back to the normal cell number of 46 chromosomes. And that interaction between the male sperm and the female egg chromosomes is what results in a child looking similar in some respects to both the mother and the father. In nature, this process is caused by a spike of the hormone called LH. It's released from the pituitary gland. But we've got the pituitary gland switched off by the use of an agonist or an antagonist. Therefore, we have to give something similar to the natural LH surge. What has been found to be the most useful in this area is actually not to use LH itself, but to use pregnancy hormone, HCG. We're not quite sure why HCG works better than the natural LH, but that's the way it is. And that comes in two forms, two brand names. One is Pregnal, which is refined from the urine of pregnant women. The other is called Ovidrel, and that's a genetically engineered variation of HCG, the pregnancy hormone. Again, both work in an equivalent manner. The risks of these two injections is that they may trigger not only the maturation of the egg, but in situations where there are multiple eggs, like more than 20, they also can set in train the pathological processes that lead to ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome. That particular issue is the biggest risk in IVF in terms of requiring hospitalization from the mother. However, there has been a significant change in the risk of hyperstimulation syndrome over the last 5 years. It has been found that if a woman is going through an antagonist cycle, so that's the ones with orgalutran or cetrotide, and the woman is heading towards a hyperstimulation situation with high numbers of follicles and high levels of estrogen, rather than give the HCG trigger, if we use the body's own natural processes, we can stimulate the pituitary to produce a natural surge of LH. By using a single shot or two shots of an agonist. So an agonist trigger, GnRH agonist trigger, in the form of Lucrin, or there's also Decapeptyl. And with those medications, we actually can trigger that maturation process, that reduction in chromosome number, in the same way as using HCG. But what has been found is that remarkably, despite very large egg numbers and high estrogen levels, the hyperstimulation virtually never occurs. That's made IVF much safer. Once the eggs have been collected, the medications prescribed for the second half of the cycle, if embryo transfer is going to occur, are those that will sustain the lining of the womb so that pregnancy can be tolerated and indeed encouraged to grow. One problem we have in an IVF cycle is that by stimulating with FSH, we produce unnaturally high levels of estrogen and ultimately unnaturally high levels of progesterone around the time of ovulation. And the effects of those hormones produce an abnormal endometrium, which has the risk of breaking down early unless we support it with progesterone in some form or another. The options available are giving progesterone vaginally, either in a cream or gel, crinone, or waxy pessaries of progesterone inserted a couple of times a day. Another option is to stimulate the areas in the ovary from where the eggs have come by giving HCG hormone, which stimulates them, those cells, to produce more progesterone. This latter use of HCG pregnal is relatively uncommon these days, since we know there's a potential issue in relation to hyperstimulation stimulation. These luteal phase support hormones are kept being given until the pregnancy test. The pregnancy test, if it's positive, in most people's eyes, means that the hormones of the pregnancy itself will sustain pregnancy into the remainder of the pregnancy. However, there are many clinicians who feel they have to continue those medications. Personally, I think it's a waste of time because the body is producing sufficient hormones to keep things intact. But it does no harm in early pregnancy to be taking these. And so if your doctor says that that's what he wants or she wants, it's okay to continue. But if you find them uncomfortable or you're getting side effects of irritation, it's also totally reasonable to cease them once pregnancy is established. So that's the main collection of hormones and medications that we give during a cycle. They're the hormones to switch off the pituitary gland so that we have total control of the ovaries. There's the FSH, whose role is to stimulate your ovaries to produce as many eggs as possible. There's the trigger injection, which finally matures the eggs. And then there's the progesterone supplementation, either directly by pessaries or indirectly by using pregnal. Any of you who've gone through a cycle will know some of these medications. Those of you going into the cycle in the future, hopefully this will be helpful in knowing a bit more about them. And don't forget that you can access all the previous episodes by going to our website, www.theivfjourney.com, and select IVF Journey Podcast from the navigation menu.
Thank you for listening to The IVF Journey with Dr. Michael Chapman, the podcast which helps couples negotiate their way through the IVF journey all the way to parenthood. You can also ask questions by contacting Dr. Chapman's rooms on 1-800-111-483 or by emailing him michael.chapman@ivf.com.au.